You're listening to the weekly teaching podcast of Beaverton Christian Church in Beaverton, Oregon. We hope that what you hear today inspires you to laugh, question, think, and grow. If you'd like to connect with us even further, hit us up online at beaverton.cc or shoot us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this week's episode.
Good morning to you. Thank you for coming to BCC this morning. How many of you guys are like, I'm a little bit scared there's going to be snow? Because the TV has got us whipped up, does it not?
Bring it.
I mean, you need to be packing water and food in your car along with chains and possibly a rifle in case you need to shoot an elk that weighs 1,000 pounds, but you can only carry 50 of it back to your campsite. And somebody in your family is going to get dysentery. It's like the Oregon Trail out here, right? We're 2 weeks into this series called Over It, and it's basically, hey, what to do when you're just over it. Last week we talked about what to do when you're over just being exhausted or tired or worn out because you think there's going to be something you can do that's going to produce a result that's going to give you rest and satisfy. And the truth is, in the middle of our world, it's very difficult to do that even for a short period of time, let alone continuously, but that the answer is found in turning to the one who gives us rest, the person that we call the Good Shepherd, Jesus Christ. And this series, Psalm 23, the 23rd Psalm, is all about what he promises us when he is the person who cares about us, protects us, and provides for us. And fear is really a strange thing, isn't it? I mean, you can think you're not scared of stuff, but starting very early, fear is very palpable. It's tangible. You feel it. You express it. It changes the way you live. It robs you of your ability to enjoy things. It robs you of joy. It robs you of the ability to have even a great future. I can remember when I was a kid, the first time I ever read something where I thought, this person gets it. I was looking at a comic strip. It was called The Far Side. Do you remember The Far Side by Gary Larson? I was like, this guy understands life. Because this is the monster snorkel cartoon. It says, it allows your child to breathe comfortably without exposing vulnerable parts to attack. This is an important comic strip because it functions on two true childhood principles, right? The first one is, there are just terrifying things out there in the dark and they're coming for you. The second thing is, as terrible and as horrifying as they are, they're powerless when you have a blanket over you. They're not allowed to eat or touch anything that the blanket covers. So as a kid, like, I got really good at like protecting myself with the blanket. Like, I would get my feet, remember when your little kid bed wasn't big, so I'd get like my feet down at the bottom, my legs spread out, so I'd get my toes to get that sheet as tight as I could at the bottom. And then you get the pulled up tight over your head and you get your arms out and you use your fingers to do the same thing. And now it's like the monster walks by, he looks in your, because he's haunting your house, he looks in, oh, there's no kid in there. It's just a perfectly made bed. Must be a sleepover. And he leaves you alone. And you fall asleep in the morning, you're all sweaty from doing this all night. It's a yoga pose, it's called The Terrified Child. But here's the thing, right? I lived through every night, including last night, and got to the place where, through experience, I can understand there's not, like, I don't have to be scared of what's in the dark in my home. And a snorkel sometimes doesn't deliver you from fear. Sometimes it transports you directly to fear. Like, I am also, just so you guys know, one of my biggest fears is sharks. And if you've got a snorkel in your mouth, you're a step closer to meeting a shark than you would be just, like, kind of wandering around here in Beaverton. Look at this horrifying picture, right? This is not fake news, right? This is from National Geographic. They don't get paid to lie to you like Facebook does. That's a real great white shark and a real kayak, and that dude stands no chance if that shark decides it wants to investigate the kayak. Can I tell you something about the fear of animals? When we start talking about the fear of animals, inevitably someone decides to help you by talking about, like, exposure. We say the dumbest things when it comes to animals, right? Like if you were just exposed to sharks, if you had more shark exposure, you'd realize that they're beautiful creatures. And then they drop this gem on you, right? And they're really more scared of you than you are of them. Can I tell you something? I don't believe that. That's not a true statement. That is 100% a lie. Because I have never once been at, like, the beach and there's a shark. And then a person gets in the water and the shark's like, people, everyone get out. The people are getting in the water. But you know what happens when there's 1,000 people in the water and one shark swims in? Everyone is out. Plus, like sharks, and this is going to be like a biology lesson for some of you. Sharks don't have hands. So if they want to figure out what something is, they have to use the only thing they've got going for them, which is their mouth. So if they don't know what you are and they want to figure out what you are, they have to swim up and bite you to see if you're made out of meat. And guess what? You most certainly are made out of meat. They always tell you even more stupid things with sharks, right? Like if you're in the water and you get attacked by a shark, punch it in the nose. I grew up in California, so I was in the pool with an older brother a lot. You know how little force you have when you're punching something underwater? Plus, you know where the nose of the shark is located, right? It's right near the mouth part of its face. You're basically just saying, eat my hand first. That's what you're saying. No amount of exposure to a shark is going to help it not be a dangerous creature, right? So if experience and exposure, the two of the things that we're really hoping to help deliver us from fear, don't work, I'm going to even take it one step further, right? Like, no amount of experience and exposure does anything to help me with my fear of flying. Anybody else scared of flying? Yeah, I don't like flying at all. It's horrifying for me. They can spot me walking onto the plane. They're like, that guy's not going to make it. He was filling out his own obituary before he got here. I saw a picture when I was in the 8th grade, the most horrifying thing ever. It was of like Aloha Flight 827. It took off from Maui and then it became a convertible in midair. It wasn't designed to do this. Those people had to fly for like 35 minutes to a different island to land. That's probably the scariest thing that I could possibly imagine happening. And whenever you start talking about like air disasters, people decide that it's not exposure or experience that's going to change your mind. It's going to be information. That's when they decide they're going to start educating you on how much safer air travel is than literally anything else in the world. Well, you know, John, thousands of people are dying every second in America in a car. That doesn't help me with an airplane. That makes me think, okay, I'm not getting in cars anymore then. Exposure, experience, information. These things only help us manage our fears. They don't drive out those fears. But David, who we talked about last week, who wrote the 23rd Psalm, he says that there absolutely is something that can drive away our fear. And do you know what that is? That thing is a person. It's the person of the Good Shepherd. That Jesus Christ himself is with us in all of our situations. And when we are willing to acknowledge his presence and when we understand who he is, then it gives us the ability to live without fear, and it gives us the ability to find hope, peace, and comfort to achieve the life we want to live in spite of him. You see, if you want to go on a Hawaiian vacation, you most certainly have to get on a plane. And if you're going to enjoy your Hawaiian vacation, you most certainly have to get in the water. Which means something has to drive out those fears. We're going to read the 23rd Psalm together again like we did last week, because when we read the words of God and when we speak them aloud, what ends up happening is God's Spirit moves in us. This is because when we say that the Bible is inspired, that inspired word, it carries the word Spirit with it, that the Spirit of God is in those words and it works and moves within us and draws us closer to him. So if you don't have a Bible to turn with us to Psalm 23, you can read it off the screen with us. We're going to read the 23rd Psalm, where David describes what it's like to be cared for by God, and he compares it to his former occupation as a shepherd. And as we read it, I just want you to let the words wash over your spirit as well. Psalm 23, starting in verse 1, says this: "The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Amen, right? Last week, we talked about that first part where we have everything we need when we have Jesus, like Dora's backpack that everything we need can unpack from. And he provides rest for us. But in this one, David starts talking about what happens when things go wrong. And we made it really clear last week that things are going to go wrong in this life. They're always going to go wrong. And if we're not prepared for it, we'll fall into that trap of saying, why me? Why did this happen to me? Instead of, what is God going to do about it? And so David, in talking about God shepherding us and caring for us, carrying out that metaphor of God is the shepherd and we're the sheep and he's leading us, he says that even though I walk through the darkest valley, right? He's not saying in case I get into a dark valley. He's actually saying he's walking through the dark valley. And if he's following the shepherd, where did the shepherd lead him? Yeah. That this dark valley, which seems frightening, which seems scary, which seems turbulent, maybe there's a storm, maybe the sun is going down, even though it seems frightening, that he will fear no evil. And why? He says, for you. He says that God is with me. That God's presence with David is what David is counting on to get him through. He won't live in fear because he knows that there is a greater power than the power of evil. This is interesting to me because when we are living in fear, what we're doing is we're looking at that great power, the great power for evil. And don't get me wrong, there is absolutely a great power for evil in this world. If you're all paying attention, you can see it at work, dividing people, oppressing people, elevating some people, marginalizing other people, pushing on our pride and our greed and our self-centeredness to pursue what we want. And David says that there is a greater power in this world, the power of God, the power of goodness. And he says, I won't fear evil because you are with me. And then he says something that's super important. I think it's essential that we understand it. He says, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. They comfort me. Now, in ancient times, they were pretty nomadic. They traveled from place to place. So everybody carried, you always had to carry a knife edge with you. You always had to carry something to make fire with you. So everybody carried things like that. But shepherds had very specific tools. And David, having grown up a shepherd, that's why he's so good at these metaphors, he's describing two attributes of God here that he wants us to understand that provide us comfort. And don't miss this. When David is describing God in Psalm 23, he's talking about his personal experiences, what his life has been like as he has followed God. He says that the shepherd has these two tools, and it's important for us to recognize that it's tool because lots of times when you read this, you think, oh, well, it's just synonymous, rod and staff. There's actually two different tools. The first one, right, the rod. If you, like, have a favorite Ninja Turtle and your favorite Ninja Turtle is Donatello, you know what I'm talking about here, right? The bow, right? It's a weapon. It's made for striking. It's not taller than the shepherd because the shepherd has to be able to wield it, but it's made for striking at a distance. It's built for protection. It's an offensive weapon that the shepherd uses to protect the sheep. David says that God's power, his protection, brings me comfort. He is more powerful. He is more capable than evil is. So many times in our life, we forget that when the scriptures describe God, it describes him as omnipotent, right? Having all the power. That there are powers in this world, but the greatest power is God. That his rod brings David comfort. And then there's the staff, right? You know what the staff is. You'll recognize the staff. You've seen this. The staff exists for us to be able to identify who's playing the shepherd in the Christmas play at the church pageant. Just kidding. It's a very functional tool. This one is taller than the shepherd, right? This is the one that he uses to walk with. And it's tall because it's got to be long so he can reach out and with that hook, get the sheep, to guide the sheep, to direct the sheep. It's a tool by which the shepherd demonstrates his care for the sheep. And David's talking about God's correction and his instruction, his ability to provide comfort by guiding the sheep. That his rod and his staff, his great power and his great care for us bring David comfort. There's a fantastic point in the Old Testament stories when Moses is shepherding God's people and he says, I see that God's greatness is not in his power, but it's in his goodness. That all of that power is leveraged for our care, for our protection. That God's greatness is not in his omnipotence, right? It's in his omnipresence and it's omniscience working together. That he is everywhere. He knows everything. He has all the power and he leverages that for good. That's what makes God great. There's a passage in the Bible that gives us a beautiful description and a demonstration of how Jesus actually does these things. If you have your Bibles and you want to turn them with me to the book of Mark. Mark was a young man who he knew Jesus. When Jesus died and was resurrected and returned to heaven, he wrote down a biography of Jesus, one of the very first ones. And in this first biography in Mark chapter 4, verse 35, he describes a situation where Jesus and his followers, called the disciples, they're in a boat and they're traveling and something bad happens. They pass through a dark valley. It says this in Mark chapter 4, verse 35. As evening came, Jesus said to the disciples, let's cross to the other side of the lake. This means that at some point in time, they were on one side of a lake and Jesus wanted to go to the other side. If you've been with us to Israel, you've been to this lake. It still exists in our real time in geography and history. It's called the Sea of Galilee. And it's a deep lake, right? But then there's also mountains on all surrounding it all around. So that means that high pressure systems will move in very quickly and create turbulence. And so Jesus is with the disciples. They're like, let's cross the lake on the boat. So they took Jesus in the boat and started out, leaving the crowds behind, although other boats followed. But soon a fierce storm came up. High waves were breaking into the boat and it began to fill with water. This is an important thing for us to pay attention to because these high pressure systems that produce turbulence that then cause us to feel completely overwhelmed, this is a perfect metaphor for life, isn't it? You know somebody who has high expectations of you, that high pressure for you to perform, to do or accomplish or be something. And when that pressure comes, it can come very quickly and it produces turbulence. Maybe it's somebody at work, your boss, it's a coworker. They're constantly applying pressure to produce results. Maybe it's you're married to this person. Maybe you're dating this person. Maybe you share a room with this person in the same house. Maybe it's your parent. Maybe it's a teacher. Maybe it's somebody at school. What happens when we start feeling overwhelmed by all that pressure, right? We call that stress behavior. How many of you guys know what your stress behavior is? Some of us, our stress behavior is we just withdraw. We're like, nope, can't be involved. See ya, peace out. Hope you have a good life and you figure that out, but I'm gonna be doing something totally different than you. Others of us, it's the opposite, right? We don't step back, we engage. When we come in hard, right? We just start bossing people around, telling them what to do. I got clarity about this situation, let me tell you what you've gotta do. Start trying to control each thing that we need to control, and the things that we can't control, we manipulate those behind the scenes. Some of us just eat. Any stress eaters in the room? Yeah, see, here's the thing for me, right? Like, I do all of them. Like, first I get bossy, then I get scared and I hide and I just stuff my face with Cheez-Its. The minute we feel overwhelmed by the pressure and the turbulence of life, we turn to our stress behaviors because we think they're gonna deliver us. And while it may help us cope for a time, it does nothing to deliver us to our purpose and meet our goals. See, as long as this storm and these waves are crashing over the boat and the disciples of Jesus are freaking out, they're never gonna sail to the other side. They're never gonna get there. Meanwhile, we find out what's happening with Jesus. Jesus was sleeping at the back of the boat with his head on a cushion. I love these eyewitness details, right? It's like Jesus was asleep. No, he was sleeping in the back of the boat and he had his head on a cushion. The disciples woke him up shouting, "Teacher, don't you care that we're going to drown?" I told you I'm a nervous flyer, right? Which means every time I get onto a plane, I basically suffer from massive anxiety attacks that look like this. Oftentimes, I have to tell my wife all about it for the entirety of the flight. I once was on an airplane that was supposed to be a 5-hour flight, and it only took 4 because the wind was blowing so hard behind the airplane, it shaved an hour off. But it also made the plane do this the entire time. I was in the middle of a strongly worded email to the Federal Aviation Administration about why they won't allow me to bring a parachute as my carry-on item, which makes perfect sense to me, but illegal, thank you, D.B. Cooper. I was like looking at my cup. You know they have that little like indentation in your tray that's only like this deep and they expect that your cup isn't going to fall off? Right. I was looking at it and the water was going like there was a Tyrannosaurus Rex behind my vehicle. And I'm losing it. I'm freaking out. And that's when I hear the voice of this flight attendant leans over and she's like, "Would you like some more water, sir?" And I'm like, "Yes, I would like some more water. I'm also a stress drinker." So I take my cup, right, and I hold it out, and she reaches over with the bottle, but as she's reaching over with the bottle and I have the cup, I realize that it's like she's going to pour the water directly over my computer, and this plane is bucking. So I open my mouth to say something, like, you know, maybe this isn't a good idea, and then who covers property damage on a flight situation like this? She looks at me a little bit like, you know, with the flight attendant eyes. The bottle's moving. She's like, it's the eyes that go, shh. And she starts pouring the cup of water. And she's pouring the water, right? You've ever been to a fancy restaurant and then like they're filling your cup from a bottle and they're pouring it and then like they roll off the bottle. Like not even spilling a drop on the drink. She like rolls off the bottle and just walks away. I have been paying attention to all of the wrong things on this flight. I've been looking at my cup. I've been looking at the water. I've been looking out at the wings. I think there's a man on the wing. I'm just freaking out. This woman is walking up and down the aisles with a bottle of water and she has so much confidence. She's pouring bottles of water over electronics with precision and ease. It was a master stroke. Jesus is not at all scared about the storm. He has not lost any sleep over the situation they're in. The disciples are freaking out because they're looking at the wrong thing. Their focus is off. Their confidence is off. And they mistook, they misunderstood, they misread Jesus' behavior as a sign of lack of care. Don't miss this. When we feel like things are terrible, when we're feeling overwhelmed, when we're living out of our stress behavior, what we're saying is, I don't think God cares enough to leverage that great power on my behalf. Our focus is off. Our confidence is off. We think it all depends on us, and this situation is wildly out of control. But when we look to the right person, when we put our focus in the right place, and we place our confidence in the right place, we realize it doesn't depend on us at all. It depends on Him. He's the shepherd. We're the sheep. Our job is obedience. His job is care and protection. When Jesus woke up, he rebuked the wind and said to the waves, "Silence, be still." Suddenly the wind stopped and there was great calm. Then he asked them, "Why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith?" With one word to the howling wind, silence. With one word to the waves, it's two in our English, but in his language, one to the waves, be still. He produces stillness and calmness in the midst of the storm. I want to ask you this question: who does he rebuke in this situation? The wind and the waves. That's the rod. That's the power of God on display to produce safety and security. And then he just asks them two questions. Why are you afraid? And where is your faith? That's the staff. That's saying, you have wandered far from me and I'm bringing you back close to me. The rod and the staff, they bring comfort to us because it's his power leveraged on our behalf because of his goodness. Jesus is doing exactly what David said the good shepherd would do. I want you to notice that those two questions, the first one is about focus. Why are you afraid? Do you think Jesus doesn't know why they're afraid? He knows. So he's asking so they come to self-realization. He wants them to verbalize, I'm scared of the storm. My focus was on the storm. And the second question is about confidence. Where is your faith? Because if you think this has to do with your ability to sail the boat, and you may be a great sailor, Peter, James, John. You were scared because you were looking at something that was beyond your capability and capacity, but it is not beyond mine. I want to take this second to clear up a well-meaning misstatement that you often hear in church. Lots of times you'll hear a well-meaning person say, God won't give you more than you can handle. What they mean to be saying is, because there's a verse in the book of James that says that no temptation has come to us that is greater than God can deliver us from. What they mean to say is that you're not being tempted in a way that God won't provide a way of escape from. But this verse is a demonstration 100% that God will most certainly allow you to experience and sometimes call you into something that is way bigger than you can handle so you can get an accurate self-image of what you're capable of and what you are not capable of, what you can handle on your own and what you need him to take care of for you. God gets us to the end of ourselves. We go through difficulty, hardship, pain, and suffering because it teaches us to rely on him. And he uses them as opportunities to draw us close to him. The question is, do you want to be near to that great power and that great care and feel his comfort, or do you want to fight it on your own? Because my heart tells me to do it on my own. My heart says, I'm walking through the valley with the shepherd, and I think I see a way out and I will bolt for it. And my experience says that was stress behavior. That was me looking to care for myself when someone more powerful than me and more careful than me is looking to care for me. And I want you to notice what happens next. In the middle of all the stillness, because he's just made it quiet and he's just made it still. And they were really scared because of the wind and the waves. Look what it says about them next. It says, the disciples were absolutely relieved. No, terrified. What are they terrified of? Who is this man? They asked each other. Even the wind and the waves obey him. This is incredible, right? Because for the first time, their focus goes from what's happening outside to the boat to who is inside the boat with them. And it produces this moment of terror for them. And I think this is a great illustration of what happens when you realize, oh, I've got a way bigger problem. Like, we were scared of the storm, but the actual problem we have is that we've completely misjudged who our friend is. Who we thought Jesus was. This isn't just some great teacher. This isn't someone who was a great carpenter. This isn't somebody who's a great leader. This is someone very different than that. This conversation likely took place in Aramaic. It was written down in Greek. The word that they use for terrified here carries with it awestruck, marveling, that being frozen in recognition. Let me tell you what they were recognizing. This is important for us to grasp. You guys want to take a real quick side trip? Sure. We grew up in the same culture, you and I. Like, we grew up mostly in America. Some of you are here from outside of America, but you know the lyrics to the song Happy Birthday, right? Like, I wouldn't have to teach you happy birthday if I started singing. You would just join in and join along with me. And we know a lot of songs like that, just due to our life experiences. Like, if I were to say, like, give me a break, break me off, you would go, break me off a piece of that Kit Kat bar. Burr, you know, right? We all know songs. We all have things held in common that we've experienced, things that bring us together and unite us. They had songs back then too, right? Guess what one of them was? Psalm 23. They grew up singing these songs to each other. They sang them at school. They sang them at synagogue. They understood who they were based on the songs. They understood who God was based on the songs. One of those songs that they sung was Psalm 107, another song written by David. And listen to how David describes God in this situation. He's not talking about a shepherd. He's talking about a storm at sea. And in Psalm 107, it says this: Lord, help, they cried in their trouble, and he saved them from their distress. He calmed the storm to a whisper and stilled the waves. What a blessing was that stillness as he brought them safely into harbor. This is a psalm about what God does when he shepherds his people. And this is exactly what Jesus had done. This is a moment of clarity that this isn't just a song, it's a prophecy, and Jesus has just fulfilled it in our very presence. He's not some teacher, he's not some carpenter, he's not some leader. He is God himself in the flesh, come to leverage all of that goodness and all of that power, all of that greatness for our care, comfort, protection. He is shepherding us with his rod and his staff, just like David said God would do. This is a terribly encouraging thought for us, is it not? Because as long as we think it depends on us, we will not turn to him. As long as we think that those great fears are going to overwhelm us, we will dive into those stress behaviors and we will live out of them and we will suffer. We will suffer because we don't experience joy. We don't experience peace. We don't experience comfort. We experience pressure and turbulence. This is good news for us here today in this room because we're facing fears that are much greater than a monster snorkel can deliver us from. We're facing much greater fears than a shark who, if we're being honest, is not going to get us today. Most of us aren't getting on a plane today. There are bigger and greater and more difficult fears, more real fears. Some of you are terrified that someone doesn't love you anymore, that someone is going to leave you, that you don't know how to help this person, that you might lose your job, that how much you owe is greater than you can pay back. There are real, terrifying, petrifying fears that lock us in place. God allows them so we can see that we don't have what it takes. And the first step is saying, I am not God. I am not the shepherd. I can't handle everything on my own. And we won't ask for help until we acknowledge that. This is what the scripture calls repentance. It's turning from believing that we've got it all figured out on our own and it's up to us, and saying, no, God, I trust you. And what you're asking me to do is be obedient. And as I am obedient, you will change me. You will use my circumstances to change me. And as you change me, I will affect and influence my circumstances for good for you. And what it means is we have to change that place where our focus and our confidence lies. When God provides these moments of stillness, we have to answer his questions. What are you afraid of? Where is your focus? And where is your faith? Where are you placing your confidence? If you're here today and you are terrified of difficult and hard things that are most certainly a part of your life, focus on Jesus' actual presence to live free of fear. He is here right now with us in the room. He's a part of every conversation we have. He goes with us in the car. The beautiful thing about Jesus going back to heaven when he said, I will be with you always, is that his omnipresence means he can be everywhere at once. And so the real question isn't, is Jesus here? The question is, am I acknowledging Jesus' presence here? from the beginning of the Bible until the end of the Bible, every story in between, success isn't that people get what they want or that God changes their circumstances. It's that Jesus is with them in their circumstances. And whether that's Noah inside of a boat in a storm, God is with him. If it's Daniel in a den filled with lions, God is with him, holding their mouths shut. If it's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in a fiery furnace, he is walking in the flames with them. When we focus on the presence of God, that's when we say, he will bring peace to me in the midst of this storm. The question is, do we want to acknowledge his presence and live as if he is there with us? When that takes place, we can focus on Jesus' care. And then we will begin to feel his comfort. That he's not just present and he's not just powerful, but he cares about me. I am important to him. It is super easy for me to tell you that you are important to Jesus and he loves you. And it may be super easy for you to tell somebody else that, but believing it for ourselves, that's the hard part, isn't it? That he cares about me. That he wants to provide for me. That he wants to protect me. And when I focus on the fact that he came to live and experience every kind of situation we can experience, this is why the scripture says that he was tempted in every way, but without sin, and that he lived through every testing based on his close personal connection to the Father, filled with God's Spirit, that he experienced every fear you have faced and he has walked through it. He did that because he cares, so he can identify and give you the strength in your trial. He is not indifferent to us. We misread his confidence. He even died a painful death and was resurrected to show us the way through painful deaths and resurrection. No matter what you're facing, he will walk with you through it, and he can resurrect it on the other side in this life and in the next. And this means we focus on his instruction to find direction. It's shocking to me how simple it can be to find our way when we're lost. The actual instruction can be very easy. The choosing to surrender and submit to it is the hard part, is it not? Like when I need to lose weight, it's a pretty simple formula. It's like, consume fewer calories than I expend. That's the only way it works. Do you know what I don't want to do? I don't want to do that. I want there to be like a pill or something I can take. If I want to like get my finances in order, like every financial planner, every whiz I've ever talked to has says the same thing. Well, you just got to spend less money than you make. But isn't there a way that like the government will write me a check for what I overspent on? So often in life, the instruction that Jesus offers us is that easy. He says, if you want to be my sheep, keep my commandments. Stay close to me. Do what I ask you to do. I will change you. I will change your circumstances. You will find success and life change. You will become different, and you as a different person will make circumstances different. Do you trust me enough to follow me? Then when I reach out my staff and I bring you back, come back to me. We focus on Jesus' instruction to find direction. If you're here today and you're like, I need to do that. We got Rooted coming up you can sign up for. You just write out, tear off card, put it in that box. We got men's and women's groups. We got home groups you can be a part of. We are transformed by what we surrender to. We can give in to our desires, our fears, our stress behaviors, or we can surrender to the Good Shepherd whose great power and whose great comfort are brought in for our good care.